I think there's really a growing interest in health and wellness in our country. And one of the things we now know is that a lot of what is required to be healthy and well isn't going to come from a pill.
That's Dr. Brent Bauer, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Dr. Bauer is the co-author of a book from the Mayo Clinic, The Integrative Guide to Good Health. Home remedies meet alternative therapies to transform well-being. Dr. Bauer, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Tell us a bit about the origin of this book. Why did you and your co-authors feel there was a need for this kind of book right now?
Well, I think there's really a growing interest in health and wellness in our country. And one of the things we now know is that a lot of what is required to be healthy and well isn't going to come from a pill. And so we've actually been following our patients for the last 15, 20 years, watching them do a lot of things, meditation, yoga, acupuncture, herbs, that we weren't trained for 20 or 30 years ago in medical school. So as we see this usage growing and growing, the interest is there, we've had to do a lot of research to kind of catch up. But now that we've caught up and we have good research, we can actually reach in and say, you know what? Acupuncture is effective for pain. So let's integrate that. Let's bring it into conventional medicine. So we're actually getting the best of both worlds. And I think that's really broadening the opportunities to help us stay well and healthy.
Let's talk a little bit more about that term, integrative medicine. What does that mean?
Well, I think it's like the elephant and the blind men, right? I think it means different things to different people. And it depends on what perspective you're coming to with it. But I think for most simplistically, if we think of conventional medicine, what we've thought about is regular medicine or routine medicine. It's a great system. It does great things when we're broken and probably no better place in the world. But on the other hand, if we're trying to stay well and healthy, there's been a whole other realm of therapies and approaches, home remedies, ancient traditional Chinese medicine remedies, acupuncture, massage, meditation, that have used to live out there, different from conventional. The two were kind of either or. You could do one or the other, but not both. And integrative medicine means now that we have good research on acupuncture, on massage, on a lot of the herbs and supplements that actually show they can be effective, that they can be safely used, they're not magic bullets. We don't use them in place of conventional medicine, but we now integrate them so we have an integrative medicine, one that respects both sides of the coin and brings them together for hopefully the benefit of the individual in front of us.
Why do you think that this approach is so important? Why is it good for us to take a look at our health in this way?
Well, I think we're seeing the limits of a healthcare system that's really good at fixing broken things, but hasn't put as much emphasis on health and wellness. And so we have an aging population. We have all kinds of challenges if we just keep focusing on what's broken. So I think there's equal argument could be made, if not even stronger, that we ought to be putting as much emphasis on trying to prevent disease. We ought to try and be optimizing health. And even if we have a disease, how do we optimize wellness for somebody who's facing a chronic illness? So I think this is where integrative medicine becomes kind of cool. It starts to open up the idea of thinking of beyond just good nutrition, good exercise. Maybe I should have some element of mind-body practice. Maybe I have to think about my social connections, my sleep. A lot of things that if we put them all together, we can really optimize health and well-being for everybody at any stage of their health journey.
One of the things you've done in your book, of course, you give some more detailed information, but you've also created a simple graphic of a traffic light. Tell us about that.
Well, so the idea is if you want quick information, and we're Americans, we want it quick and fast. So if you flip to a page and you see a green light, let's say that might be for curcumin for osteoarthritis symptoms. A green light means there's pretty good evidence, it's pretty safe, and so most of us could consider using it. But again, don't just go buy it. It means talk to your care team and make sure it's okay for you. A red light generally means, boy, there's some real risks. It could be dangerous, or the evidence is really negative. So it doesn't mean you could never use a red light, but it means, boy, that's going to be a much deeper conversation with your care team before you'd ever consider integrating that into your care.
I want to talk a little bit more about the structure of this book. Tell us about how it's organized and what people are going to find here.
Well, I think, you know, the opening part of the book is really this idea of how do we think of health and wellness more comprehensively. So it's taking us beyond the usual eat better, exercise more. We've all heard that. We're not really very successful as a country in following that. So how do we broaden the thinking? And I think that one of the key things early on is this idea of the brain. How do we rewire the brain? How do we get the brain to be more of a less of a stress reactor and more of a stress mitigator, so we don't get the negative effects of stress, which is a big part of our culture? So I think we try and start out with a very broad brush strokes and then dive into individual conditions. So for example, if you have hypertension, well, of course, we want you to eat good, healthy meals. We want you to exercise, lose weight. But maybe on top of that, adding something like meditation, which has been shown to reduce hypertension in many studies, may be a way of approaching it with a tool that you didn't have in your toolkit before you read the book.
The other thing that struck me as I read through this book is that there are certain things that are good sort of across the board, and you touched on a couple of them, diet and exercise. If you're doing that to treat one particular condition, chances are it's going to benefit you in a lot of other ways as well.
There's no question. I mean, if you think of our big problems in our country right now, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, much of this is related to lifestyle. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, we have far more access to food that's high in calories, low in nutrition, and most of us are not working at jobs that require us to swing a pickaxe for 8 hours a day. So we've gone to a much more dense calorie nutrition and a much lower energy expending culture. And so it's not surprising that what we're seeing is the epidemics of obesity and diabetes and so forth. So fundamentally, I don't think there's a magic bullet here. I think we're going to have to do the nutrition. We're going to have to do the exercise. But once we've built that good foundation, and then we still have an issue, for example, let's say high triglycerides, even after I'm eating really well, exercising really well, I still have high triglycerides. Maybe instead of a pill, another alternative might be to use a fish oil preparation and treat the triglycerides that way. So trying to make sure we always have the foundation of health, good nutrition, good exercise, a good stress management program, good sleep, good social connections, build that strong. And then on top of that, some of these more, what used to be more esoteric therapies, now are actually starting to say, yep, here's a great place to bring in meditation. Here's a great place to bring in curcumin, or here's a great place to use acupuncture to deal with this pain issue.
So let's talk a little bit more about some of those non-traditional therapies that people may have thought was sort of out there, but research has shown is really has positive impacts for our health.
Yeah. Well, acupuncture is a great example. 20 years ago, it was pretty weird, I think, for most doctors and a lot of patients, but there was a lot of anecdotal stories about people getting real benefit, especially for pain. And that led to a large number of studies, several of which were done here at Mayo Clinic, where we asked the question in a scientific fashion, does this really have an impact on pain, or does this really help nausea when patients are going through chemotherapy? And more of those studies came back positive. It became obvious that if our, you know, the number one value at Mayo Clinic is the needs of the patient come first. Well, if I have a patient in front of me who's having severe pain and the opioids aren't working, or we don't want to use the opioids, then it's really nice to reach back into that toolkit and find that I can bring acupuncture as an option. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then I can bring in massage. If that doesn't work, I can bring in meditation. Or more likely, I can bring in all three and probably have a very profound impact on a lot of pain and maybe help reduce our reliance on opioids, which has become such a problem for our country.
One of the things I was thinking about, and perhaps you can tell me how the research deals with this, but it seems because of this sort of mind-body connection, sometimes if we think it's good for us, then we may see some positive results from it.
No, it's a beautiful point. The placebo response is very real. Yeah, we know, for example, if we took 100 people and brought them into a room and told them that this is a pill that's going to reduce blood pressure, we know, and it was just a sugar pill, there's nothing that would make blood pressure go lower. We know just by saying that, probably 30% of people will have a pretty significant reduction in their blood pressure. So that's a great thing to recognize. We can have our brain have a big impact on our health without using pills. So taking that placebo effect and then looking at what's going on in the brain when that happens, and then maybe activating some of that positive changes, but do it intentionally. So do it with meditation, do it with guided imagery, and become very positive aspects with really hardly any risks, right? It's very hard to get harmed by guided imagery or meditation or Tai Chi if it's done properly. We know that if we're going to invest our limited healthcare dollars, conventional medicine for the most part wants to know that what we're doing is doing more than the placebo effect. So when we look at massage, we look at acupuncture, we look at some of these, really we're looking to see is the effect greater than what we would see with placebo alone? And we do that by having control groups where one group gets massage, one group does not. And again, most of these studies have shown a statistical significance, suggesting there's more than just the placebo effect. But I think you're also raising an important question. There's many things my patients use or do that don't have that level of evidence. And homeopathy is a good example. There's not a lot of great studies suggesting, at least from a conventional standpoint, that homeopathy is really effective. Yet many of my patients choose to use homeopathy when they get the start of a cold, and they feel that it's helped them avoid the cold. Whether it did or did not is probably not as important as the fact that they took something that was relatively safe and weren't asking for an antibiotic or something that would actually cause more problems. So there is that level of permissiveness where we may not have all the answers, but if it's not taking a lot of resources from my patient, if it's not harming them or hurting them, sometimes if it makes them feel better, it's okay to step back and say, we don't have all the answers, and if it fits for you, that's okay.
As you've pointed out several times during the course of this interview, it's mind, body, and it's also spirit. So what are some of the things that we can do to help us with that spiritual health that you reference?
Well, there's no question that this whole concept of spirituality is something that we've sort of left out of medicine for the last 20 years. We've sort of raced towards technology and forgot that we are, you know, spiritual beings. Now, that doesn't have to be a religious spirituality. It certainly can be for many people. But I have some patients who find, you know, a spiritual value in nature or in volunteer work. So the idea that we are spiritual and we should honor that spirituality, again, isn't part and parcel of medicine, but it probably has to be part of our wellness. So just like we're going to focus on nutrition, exercise, now we have to fold in mindfulness or some type of meditative program. And I think, honestly, we have to fold in something that honors the spirituality within us that's important for all of us as far as health goes.
Dr. Bauer, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Well, I sure appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Dr. Bauer is one of the co-authors of The Integrative Guide to Good Health, Home Remedies Meet Alternative Therapies to Transform Well-Being. More information and more interviews on a wide variety of topics are available at kpr.ku.edu/conversations. You can also use our KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.